I have something of a confession today. Whenever I am reading the Gospels and I come across a reference to the Pharisees in my head, I substitute good church-going people. I know most of us in the church want to associate ourselves with the disciples. After all, good church-going people at least say they want to follow Jesus. That is why they go to church. But when I look at the behavior of the contemporary church, I see more in common with the way the Pharisees are described in Scripture. There are many links, but today's focus with the text from Matthew is how we are so often more concerned with appearances than righteousness, with letter than spirit. We see this in today's Matthew's text. Matthew was a tax collector, and I know many of you hearing these words are not, let's say, overly fond of the IRS. I know there are many who would seek to minimize their tax burdens, and I understand that, but I don't want us to just draw the easy parallel thinking Matthew was as unpopular as an IRS agent. Matthew would have been seen as far, far worse. First, Matthew was not a tax collector for a Judean or Israelite government. Matthew was a tax collector for Rome, the faraway empire violently occupying and expanding influence over the region in which Jesus ministered. Second, tax collectors of that era were not paid a fixed salary. Instead, they were expected to support themselves through over-collection. Imagine if every year you knew you had overpaid, you knew you deserved a refund, but instead of getting that back, it went into Matthew's pocket. You would be upset. Matthew is not just a tax collector. Matthew is a collaborator, and if not himself corrupt, he is at least in a field full of corruption. For all of these reasons, Matthew is not someone who would be welcome in the homes of most good church-going people. I mean, Pharisees. This makes Matthew's affirmative response to Jesus surprising in the original gospel context to those who expect Jesus also to be a good, church-going kind of person like those Pharisees who are scandalized that Jesus would, as the good church-going folk say, eat with tax collectors and sinners. Now, much as I, until today, kept quiet about thinking of the Pharisees in the as good church-going people, others in the church can and have been a bit more critical. Jesus does at one point call them a brood of vipers, but for all of their issues, the Pharisees did provide alms, they did give to charity, and they did meet regularly to worship God and study the Scriptures. And so in today's passage from Matthew, Jesus is gentle with them. Jesus' response to the good church-going people, the Pharisees, is those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have come to call not the righteous, but sinners. This response counts the Pharisees as among the well and the righteous, or at least as those who are trying to. This suggests that Jesus recognizes that the Pharisees, these good church-going people, are trying, even if they're not quite hitting the mark, and they need to learn more about God's desire for mercy rather than sacrifice. As this week began, I was thinking mostly not about Matthew, but about our text from Genesis, in which God calls Abram to leave Haran and journey toward Canaan, toward the promised land. I began thinking about how, for the past few years, with COVID and emerging from COVID world, the church has been in something of a Haran moment. At our last presbytery meeting, the sermon was also based on today's passage from Genesis on Abram setting out from Haran, and to understand that place, how Abram, who we might remember came from Ur of the Chaldeans, came to be in Haran, we need to back up a little bit in the text to remind ourselves that Abram is not the one who began the journey to Canaan. His father, Terah, began that journey, leaving from Ur of the Chaldeans with his son Abram, his daughter-in-law Sarai, and his grandson Lot, the son of Terah's late son, Haran. We do not know why Terah began this journey to Canaan. The text's description is brief, saying only Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. We do not know why Terah stopped in Haran. At that presbytery meeting, the Reverend Jackie Smith Pittman, preaching on this text, offered a possibility that has stuck with me. She speculated that perhaps Terah, on reaching this place that shared a name with his dead son, stopped in grief. That perhaps Terah, who had already left his son's grave in Ur of the Chaldeans, could not bear to leave Haran behind again. Grief is powerful, and I began this week thinking about these texts in the context of the grief and trauma of the last few years, of the plans that were changed, of the church members, friends, and family that we lost and grieved imperfectly. But I came to the realization that the church has been in Haran far longer than just these past 3 years, because my mental association of Pharisees with good church-going people goes back much further than 2020. We have encountered and discussed this in worship over the past few months. We have discussed this in committee meetings. We've discussed this in session meetings. It is so easy for the church to look back on what was, on Sundays filled with children, on days without other commitments or expectations on our time. You can read Stephen Smoot's column in this week's Hampshire Review. He has some errors. He conflates things and mistakes correlation for causation, but his column captures the grief that many feel in the church for a past that was gone well more than 3 years ago. He offers, though, no path forward. He, like the church, and also like the Pharisees, is stuck in Haran, part way to the Promised Land. The Pharisees of Jesus' era were also confused. They were also looking back. They were in the land that had been promised to Abraham's descendants. But it was not theirs and had not been for centuries. They read their scriptures. They had the histories recorded there of a promise made to Abraham, fulfilled through Moses and Joshua, Samuel and David, through Solomon and Nathan, and then a promise lost as king after king failed to realize the promise, failed to uphold the promise, resulting in empire after empire, in the Assyrians, then the Babylonians, then the Persians, then the Greeks, and now the Romans occupying the land. The Pharisees, too, were filled with grief over what they saw as a promise unfulfilled, a promise broken, and so they stopped moving forward. The Pharisees stopped in their Haran and began looking for a Messiah who would restore what was, rather than one who would usher in what is to be. Paul, himself a former Pharisee, captures this in his letter to the Romans. For the promise that he would inherit the world did not come to Abraham or to his descendants through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. The promise made to Abraham was not a promise for himself, but for his future. God did not promise the land to Abraham. God promised the land to Abraham's descendants. In Scripture, when Paul and others talk about the law, it is always a reference to the law of Moses. The law is recorded in Exodus, Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy. A law that did not exist when Abraham received the promise, and so no promise to Abraham could be conditioned on it. Paul also remembers that this promise was not made only to Abraham's descendants through Isaac, but to all of the many nations which Abraham fathered. So often still in our attempts to recapture what was, we turn our focus inward on our own nation, our own tribe, our own congregation, focusing on those who are here or on those who were here. Focusing on what was until we forget to look for what can be. That promise in the future, that promise of what is to be, is what God is calling us to. That promise of the future is what Jesus is seeking and serving when he dines with the sinners and tax collectors. That promise of the future is what led Terah to depart from Ur of the Chaldeans. And it is what led Abraham to set out from Haran toward the Negev. That promise of the future is what we lose when, like Terah, like the Pharisees, we look back to recapture what was. I do not know what will be. I do not know what we are being called into. I believe that we can discover that together. I believe that there is still life in the church. I believe in the promise of the resurrection. I believe that we are capable of things we have not yet imagined because I believe, as did Abraham, as did Paul, that God is able to do what God has promised. May we all.